Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. Happy to be back. I've got my man Fletcher Page. Do you tan?
I actually can, but I have to really take it in very small increments. I have to build up.
I'm concerned then, because this has not been a small increment for you. 10 days in Arizona is a lot of time to be out there in the dry heat, because you helped out the Reds folks, give them a little break from the spring training disaster, and then popped over to the owners' meetings where you've been for the last 3 days. That's a lot of opportunities to burn.
Yes, and true to my nature, I showed up on the Bengals beat. Everything was rolling 4-1. I get there, the wheels come off of it.
Yeah,
I get to Red Spring training. Everybody's excited. It's a lot of, Puig is here. Everything is great. I show up. Senzel gets sent down. Scooter strains his groin, is out for 2 to 3 months. Seriously, yeah. Like the day after I got here. It's me.
Yeah, people are going to really start to associate you with these failures. It's funny, good friend of the podcast and a former Bengals scribe, Kevin Goheen, is notorious for having never covered a Cincinnati professional playoff victory, and his mere presence pretty much decides how games are going to turn out. I believe he is an absolute grim reaper of optimism. So maybe you are taking that. I guess it wouldn't be the crown you'd be taking from him. You'd be taking the machete or whatever the what is that? The thing that he holds. Someone is totally laughing at me because I can't think of what that thing is. The staff? What is that called that the Grim Reaper has?
I thought it was a machete.
I prefer the concept of it being a machete. I know it's not, and I don't know what that thing is called. So if you're listening to this and you're embarrassed that I don't know it, please tweet it at me, at Paul Danner Jr., or just at Fletcher Page, so I don't have to see it and he can tell me. Anyway, we've got a lot to get to because a lot has been happening. We waited to do this BBP because we wanted to wait until after Zach Taylor and Mike Brown spoke in Arizona before we went and waxed poetic on a bunch of different topics, knowing that they would shed light on them. So here we are now tonight doing the late Wednesday night BBP. This is what we're out of our routine. Normally we do early morning, got the fresh coffee flowing. The hope of a brand new day is in front of us, but no, instead the wine is probably popped open, and we'll see where this ends up as we get into all these topics, because there's plenty to get to. You're going to get a lot of audio from Mike and some stuff from Zach Taylor. I talked to Darquez Dennard this week as he had an about face and ended up re-signing back. So he has a little bit of talk about his frustration with that free agency process that worked out pretty well for the Bengals.
We talked to Kerry Wynn, who the Bengals made that signing official, a little kind of under the radar, quiet little victory for the Bengals on their defensive line. So we're going to get to all of that. You're going to hear from a lot of different people today, but let's start with the big news. And I think the biggest nugget to come out of this week would be Mike Brown talking about Andy Dalton. I mean, now with Marvin gone, those two names are the two most mentioned names off the lips of fans. I mean, and Mike saying something about Andy is probably as big a news as you can get with this organization right now.
Exactly. And it's also a perfect storm with the kind of the climate going around the league where you've got, you know, Goff with the Rams, Mahomes with the Chiefs, and we've seen what teams can build around a quarterback on a rookie contract. And that comes at the same time as Andy Dalton is on the perfect veteran contract where you have the flexibility to make a decision, either to stick with them long term or to start to build around your own rookie. So this next season coming or this season coming up is pivotal as it relates to what the Bengals will be doing at quarterback in the future.
It really is. And so let's just do this. You know, the question was asked to Mike about Andy Dalton, about his future. What is that? Of all the conversations that I have had with people in this organization on and off the record in recent months and talking about this offseason and extensions, they have never, I wrote this week, I've never heard the name Andy Dalton come up, and it made it apparent that that was not in their plans, it seemed. Well, Mike kind of made that official with how he answered this question. So I want to bring Mike in here talking about Andy Dalton.
Got a question about quarterback. When you look at like the Rams with Jared Goff and the Chiefs with Mahomes, do you feel like it's advantageous for teams to get a quarterback on a rookie contract and build around that?
Oh, it is. You got to be right, though. Whoever it is has to be a good player like Mahomes, Goff. If you do that, you have the advantage of more cap room.
Sure, have your coat shoes.
Thank you.
Careful, the plate's a little warm.
Right now, the Chiefs are in ideal position.
Mm-hmm. But do you feel like is that good for or bad for the NFL as a whole?
It's the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. May get your chance some other time. Mm-hmm. Then you have the advantage. But is it a temporary advantage for 4 or 5 years? Yes. Mm-hmm. It is an advantage in the sense that they have a lower quarterback cost and more cap room. But it doesn't seem to bother New Orleans,
right,
or New England.
Would you guys consider extending Andy before this season, or do you view this year as kind of maybe a critical year for him with first year under Zach?
I think it's a good year for him to show like he can. We think he will,
mm-hmm.
And then after he reestablishes himself, we would want to get together with him and see if we can extend it.
Gotcha.
Does that make it a tricky thing if, say, a quarterback is the best guy left on the board in the draft, but you still are waiting to see if Andy can kind of take that next step again? So, I mean, quarterback still has to be on the table if it falls that way, right?
Well,
That's always tough, probably, no way.
If I heard you right, maybe Katie can explain, but quarterback is what pro football is all about, and that's what gives you a top team when you have the top quarterback. The top quarterback, the top coaching, you put that together and you win.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton down in New Orleans, Belichick, and Brady in New England. There are probably some others right now, I'd have to say, Kansas City. That one, they never expected the degree of success, mm-hmm. that Mahomes was going to provide. So they're very happy and should be.
you envision Andy for the next, you know, do you envision Andy over the long
haul? I think Andy is a good player, and that he will rebound off of last year. He was hurt. We lost so many other pieces. It fell apart. But if he's healthy and we stay healthy enough, otherwise, I have confidence.
So that I mean, that's it makes it pretty clear, in my opinion, that it is sort of what we've been saying it should be. They are all about Andy Dalton this year. They believe in Andy Dalton, and they feel like there's reason to believe that he can have that year, and they're really intrigued by what he looks like with an offensive-minded coach, with a system that they believe can do some really great things, where you've seen offensive coaches come in and help quarterbacks have career years in other places, do special things in other places. This guy's a very similar ability, whether you're talking about Kyle Shanahan with Matt Ryan help take him to the next level, or you're talking about even Nick Foles taking a team to the Super Bowl, or Zach Taylor and Sean McVay with Jared Goff, or what you saw happen in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky. You know, and certainly you can throw Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. You can throw guys in there. Anyway, the hope is that you could see something and turn this into to make or break year. I think that's what Mike is saying. This is a make or break year for Andy Dalton. We're going to come out of this with a decision on whether we are willing to invest in Andy Dalton for a long contract worth a whole lot of money, or if we are going to go all in on flipping it over to the rookie deal thing and trying to hit on that.
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, Zach, he talks about Andy. He seems to really love Andy, and that dates back to 2010. He just sort of – they happened to be in the same state at the same time as both of their prospective careers were taken off. Zach watched a lot of TCU. And so he feels like he really has a lot of knowledge about Andy's career and progression. So if it works out, you've got your answer. Andy's your guy. If it doesn't, it probably means that the season has not gone very well, because I would imagine that would – that's another thing. I could get into that later. But that you've probably got a really good draft pick and an opportunity to build for the future. So one way or the other, that major question – the quarterback question, which is what pro football teams are always trying to figure out, it will be answered by December, one way or the other.
Yeah, well, potentially. I mean, there's another side of this, right? I mean, people have – it's like we got to play this out. So what does this mean if they go 10-6 and get a wild card and loses in the playoffs again, right? What does that mean?
That's the worst. That's the worst case scenario. Then
that's the toughest decision. You just want it to be definitive, right?
Right.
It's Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan create this system and work with Andy, and he's the perfect fit for it, which they have claimed. Which I don't think they have much choice to say anything other than that. And it takes off, and he looks like 2015 Andy, or you know, first 5 weeks of last year, Andy Dalton. He sustains it over the course of a year. They win a playoff game. Then it's, you should invest in a guy if he's doing that. If you see that, who's only, you know, he's early 30s. If a guy has shown you that, if he's playing at those levels, and he's doing it with, there's a great mesh with your coach and your quarterback, and everything is fitting well, and you win the division or whatever, you should invest in that guy. I would argue that would be a smart decision. But again, and if it looks up and down and you see more of a lot of the same stuff, where you see big game or a playoff struggle, you know, you don't want it to be that middle. I think it has to be great, you know?
I think it's just like a marriage, okay? You either know, or if you think you don't know, it means no. So I think by December they'll know. And I know that the 10-6 scenario with another wild card loss, that would put you back in that flux pending situation. And I just think it's that would be the worst case. But even there, I think you know the answer.
You're not even married yet. What are you doing, marriage analogies?
I'm here for everybody out
know?
There.
You don't know anything. You don't know anything about what marriage is like. You know what? You know what marriage is like. Marriage is like what these last 28 years have been for Bengals fans. That's what marriage is like. It's a grind. It'll wear on you. It'll make you bitter. There's some years where you claim you're going to walk away, but you don't. I'm just kidding. I'm in a very happy marriage, by the way. I don't want it to stop.
I was going to say, you could have, hey, if you needed to, you could have come out to Arizona for 10 days, catch you a breather.
I could have, but I understand that there's certain things that are important for these marriages. You got to understand what's important in these. And not going to Arizona for 10 days is important. back to the Andy point, I feel like I'm not going to say that he has to go win a playoff game, although I think it needs to be in that area. If they don't, he needs to play so well. He needs to play at a Pro Bowl level, in my opinion. Now, not get voted into the Pro Bowl, because the Pro Bowl is stupid and it shouldn't be used in any sort of measure, but play at the level of what that's considered. He needs to play like a top 10 quarterback in this league, I think. Is if you're trying to judge, if you're going to have to come back with the money, you're going to have to come back to, because you're going to have to give Andy Dalton 5 years, $125 to $150 million. I mean, Nick Foles is getting $50 million guaranteed in all kinds of money. Like, quarterbacks, Andy Dalton's market is going to be big. If he's playing like that. So if you're going to do that, you better think that you have the guy who for the next 5 years of that contract is going to play as a top 10 quarterback. And if he doesn't, because he's shown it in parts, but when he's had the right players around him, if he doesn't, then it's – and maybe they draft this year – somebody, but if he doesn't, then you're full on into, all right, Tua or any of these other quarterbacks that are going to be coming out the next year. Maybe you start thinking about Trevor Lawrence. Maybe then you go tank mode. My man Mo Egger keeps writing about how he needs
to two-year tank.
The two-year tank philosophy. I mean, I like what you can you tell me what you think? I like Mike saying this. Basically putting it out there. I mean, not that he has a – because everybody else has just been all Andy hugs and rainbows and unicorns, right? Mm-hmm. He's great. Mike is like, look, this dude needs to show it one more time. It better look real. We feel like we've got pieces around him. We gave him an offensive coach, bunch of offensive guys, bunch of QB gurus everywhere. It better look good or we're not going to give you that kind of crazy money.
Right, and Mike also did. He also went on to say, what I just said. Quarterback is what football's all about, and that's what gives you a top team. And so he mentioned Belichick, Brady, Peyton, Breeze, and so obviously a best case scenario. If you're Mike Brown, you don't think AJ Green's going to get hurt again. You think that Zach Taylor and Andy can become Sean Payton and Drew Brees for the next, 5 years. That's your best case. And that's essentially what this contract has played out to, is to provide the opportunity for this answer to be provided and for them to get this thing put away one way or the other. So, yeah, I mean, Mike said it. And maybe – I don't know. I got a few tweets from fans that said that they never heard Mike maybe speak this bluntly about a player because he is such a player-friendly owner. For the most part, I didn't think it was that blunt. I thought he was saying an obvious. The situation has been obvious to us, and I thought he just stated it.
Yeah, it's not obvious to a lot of people. Not everybody is like our loyal BB peers that are there to find Paul's phone and the in the 106th minute of the drive from Cleveland back to Cincinnati. I mean, not for those that aren't paying that close of attention, as we've been saying, and if you listen to this podcast, you know this stuff already, that they're not sitting here ready to give an extension to Andy Dalton. And you knew this is kind of what the situation was. But just Mike actually saying it, I think it strikes people because they aren't expecting it. They didn't think that they thought that way, when in fact that has been the case for a while. So that's kind of the Andy segment of this, which, like I said, I think that was sort of the big news. I want to go from there to Mike talking about AJ Green, who is another extension possibility and thing that we've talked about that's very relevant to the future of this team. And, you know, I wrote about this. I had a great question from a Twitter follower, Brendan, this week, and I stuck it in the walkthrough and kind of dove into the highs and lows of an AJ Green extension and whether it should happen, because there's all this talk about how he's on the trading block. And again, those that listen to the BBP, those that know, that is so far from the truth. Where these things start, it's people looking at the roster and saying, well, maybe they should be, right? They're rebuilding, and people that think that this team is rebuilding have not been paying attention to how they've been operating either. But saying, oh, okay, well, they should trade AJ Green because they're rebuilding and he's getting older. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I wouldn't deny that there's some validity to that logic. It ain't the logic happening around these parts.
Right.
And Mike kind of spoke on that again. So here's Mike talking about the possibility of extending AJ Green before the season starts as he enters his walk year.
How do you address AJ and the possibility of an extension for him going forward, looking at third contract historically for receivers and the fact that he's got some injury problems?
Well, I think he's a proven commodity, that the price range for him will be something that I think we'll be able to figure out, come together.
There wouldn't be any hesitation on that, waiting to see how he does this season?
Oh, it's true with anyone. If they suddenly get an injury that reduces them, well, that changes the equation. Mm-hmm. But I never plan on that happening. I like to think it won't happen. And if AJ is healthy, he's as good a receiver as anybody in the league.
Now, you know, being there, eating soup with Mike.
It's true.
You had what was your soup?
I had the famous chicken tortilla soup at this establishment that they've been providing people with since 1929.
Mm.
Mike played it more to the middle with a strong tomato.
I like Basil. A tomato. So he went tomato and grilled cheese?
I wasn't going to put it out in the streets that he ate a grilled cheese. Let the record state that you said that first. I will confirm what you said.
I would like to state, I feel like I love the proud nature of being like, I like grilled cheese and tomato soup, and I'm going to eat it. I will proudly order a grilled cheese and tomato soup tomorrow and tweet it out, because I have no problem with anyone eating grilled cheese and tomato soup. I think it's fabulous. I eat it every time I go to whenever I go to the Blind Pig, or O'Malley's in the Alley, whichever one you would call it, they have that on the menu. It's fabulous. I don't think anybody should run and hide from a grilled cheese and tomato soup. I don't care if you are 83 years old or 38 or 8. Don't run from it. Own it. Be proud of it. I like it.
It was a strong sourdough. A good grilled cheese.
I like it. More on his words and less on his grilled cheese. I guess Did it? As you were watching, as you were kind of in that conversation, I mean, did this feel definitive? And we were talking about the Andy stuff.
Yes.
I mean, this felt pretty definitive of course we're going to pay AJ Green, right?
It did, and it just made me immediately think about Gino and Carlos. Those guys got their third contract, and there are plenty of reasons why you wouldn't pay a defensive lineman that's hitting 30. Plenty of reasons why you might not want to pay a wide receiver that's missed significant time in two of the past 3 years and is now 30. I totally get it. But the Bengals are going to be, I think they're consistent. They are, I really think it's important to Mike that a player like AJ begins and finishes his career in Cincinnati. I think that's important to him.
I totally agree. I think the potential Hall of Fame factor is absolutely at play with Gino and AJ in particular. And, you know, the contracts they gave to Gino and Carlos last year shows they're not afraid of guys in their 30s, you know. And unless AJ shows up and in OTAs and in training camp, he looks a step slow, he's having more toe problems, or he re-aggravates it or something like that, unless he just looks like something has happened, they're going to go in on AJ here. I mean, they want him to be here, and he wants to be here. We talked about the Larry Fitzgerald factor a number of times. And I think when you know you have that push from the one side of the organization, AJ's going to take that money. AJ would love to stay here and continue to play here, I think. I would be – knowing him, I would be pretty shocked if he came out and said, nah, I'm going to play this out and leave it open to the possibility of coming back next year. Not because I don't think it would be smart business on his part, but because I just don't think that he wants to deal with that. I think he just wants to sign his deal and be here and be a Bengal for life and have that be his career. And, you know, get him to 35, give him another 4 or 5 years. And, you know, everybody will go home happy.
Right. And in that scenario, you'd have two 1,000-yard receivers with Tyler Boyd emerging. You got the leading rusher in the AFC and Joe Mixon. And so that's a good balance there of, you know, AJ still with some time left, but also with Boyd and Mixon being so young. I mean, you have to like that. And then obviously they need to turn their attention to what happens with Andy, and then that offensive line needs to get maybe move a little bit further. But so I think that's where they stand.
For the next 2 years, for sure, you would have Green, Mixon, Boyd, and Andy if you wanted them.
And maybe a resurgent Tyler Eifert. In a best case.
Well, you have him under a 1 year deal right now. So I mean like you would have under contract in this scenario where you extend Boyd, you extend AJ, and he's under his current deal. I mean it's sort of this like 2 year offensive window, so to speak.
Right.
That would be out there. Who knows, you know, we talked about the quarterback thing, but you can see their view of the core. And AJ, I think, is still 1A for them. And look, it's hard to argue it. Look at the difference in the first 8 weeks and then what happened for even just looking at the window of the three games between Green getting hurt and Dalton getting hurt. So the difference offensively there, that alone, when you're throwing to Cody Core on 4th-and-2 in Baltimore and all that stuff. I mean, he is a game changer that this organization just doesn't have. They just don't have enough blue chip players to afford to screw with one of their main ones just because he's crossed 30. And I know there's a nervousness with that, and there should be. And maybe that's going to create some haggling over what that looks like monetarily. But I think like Mike said, they'll work that out. You know, they'll find that number. This team has never hesitated when they have a guy who they have as a priority one to get that done. Whether it's been Gino, whether back when it was Andy, but with all of these guys that they have extended over the course of time, when they've wanted to get it done, they have. And they want to get this done.
Yeah, I mean, injuries notwithstanding, and I know that always comes into play, this is the most Bengals thing possible, you know? Cornerstone guy, longtime player, maybe has a few question marks, but not really. They're going to re-sign him. I'd be shocked. You know, it would be shocking if they don't.
Yeah, I think they'll get it done. I don't think it. Last time when they did the extension, it was like walking to board the bus to go play the Raiders in week one, because that was the deadline they had sort of set. Was we're not going to do this once the season starts. So they set the deadline of getting on the bus, and it was minutes before they boarded the bus, he was signing the contract for his big extension. And I don't think it'll be like that this time. I just don't. I think the two sides will want to get it done enough that they'll sit down and hash it out. Thing to watch over the course of this offseason is what happens with Julio Jones, who wants an extension. Whatever Julio's money look like is probably what AJ's money is going to look like. They have been side by side for over a decade now, since their high school days, and their contracts have mirrored each other here in the NFL. Their careers have mirrored each other. Their drafts. I mean, it's just we'll see if that shoe drops first. I think it sets a pretty easy template for what the Bengals would have to do with AJ Green. You mentioned the offensive line thing briefly.
Oh, yes. And
so I guess, you know, one of them, this is the first time we've heard Zach really talk about Bobby Hart. Sorry, guys. Sorry, everybody that's listening. I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go down the Bobby Hart path. It's a sad path. I feel like, isn't it Eeyore? Isn't he the sad one?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I feel like Eeyore, but let's talk about Bobby Hart. You know? Like, I guess. But it's relevant. It's relevant. Because it's not, and we'll see, actions speak louder than words for me. So if a offensive tackle is selected at number 11 or number 42, or maybe even with that third round pick, you talk about shocked. I would be shocked if a tackle was not selected with one of those first three picks. Mm-hmm. Then Bobby Hart looks different. The whole thing looks different. Maybe the things they're saying are different. However, what they're saying now is, well, it's this. Here's Zach Taylor engaging in some questions about Bobby Hart.
What did you guys see about Bobby last year
that
made you confident and to invest in him moving forward?
Yeah, I think Bobby has a lot of great tools that we're excited to work with. And when you factor in him in the tackle market, and he's somebody that I'm really excited to work with. And I know Jim Turner feels that way, and Brian Callahan feels that way, and we all watched the same tape and did the same evaluation and came to the same conclusion. And so that's where we're at with Bobby. And we're excited to get him re-signed and have him back over that red tackle spot.
With the penalties that he had, is that...
Yeah. Not. I'm not overly concerned about that stuff. I mean, we go through and watch every run game, pass protection, penalties, sacks, all that stuff. And we felt very comfortable bringing him back.
But, I mean, when you're working with somebody like that, was that something that might have been with the snap count or
it's hard. The center? That is hard for me to say. A lot of times you know immediately after a game why the reasons were, and so when you're not necessarily a part of that conversation, it's hard to know. But I know that we feel comfortable with him and moving forward. We're happy with him at right tackle.
That was from the coach's breakfast, which happens every year out in Arizona. It's about an hour. Every single coach sits down at a table surrounded by any media that wants to come over and ask questions about whatever the hell they want. Zach's first go-round with it.
Zach had fruit.
He did not go for the grilled cheese. It was like 8 a.m. He didn't go for the 8 a.m. grilled cheese.
No, there were some hash browns that looked pretty mean, and I had to sit there for an hour and 10 minutes to listen to Zach Taylor prop up Bobby Hart, and all I could think about was getting to those hash browns. And by the time I got over there, all the other media hacks had just completely cleaned it out, and they didn't bring out another tray, and I did not get to eat any hash browns.
That is really the most rookie move. Like, that is where you sort of spelled out in your story, Zach Taylor not knowing how to get to the breakfast and Pat Shermer having to help him out at one point, right? If I was writing the story about your time at the owners' meetings, that would be my lead, is that you didn't even know that you're supposed to show up like a half hour before and hammer those hash browns before the whole thing starts.
That's right.
That is everybody. Once you've been through there once, you know. No, you don't wait to eat until they're done. You eat. You are sitting at the table waiting on them, hammering hash browns while you look at the sign with their name on it, and wait to see when they wander in, because that is the key.
I feel like that's the difference, though, between the NFL coaching fraternity and the media. You know, Pat really was there to help. You know, to help the rookie coach out. Everybody else in the media, though, they just looked at me like I was an idiot, and they laughed at themselves, and they just went back for seconds. And I was just sitting there.
Because they were taking advantage of your weakness.
That's right.
You were the runt of the litter who they were just eating up because you were too slow.
The only thing left when I got over there was like two boxes of Raisin Bran. That was it.
That's so sad. I wouldn't even know, because I've never been in such a terrible, sad position as to – put myself of not getting my hands on those hash browns and being left with two boxes of Raisin Bran.
Well, it's
bad cereal.
Well, listen, speaking of Raisin Bran, I think that with the Bobby Hart thing, I totally understand coaches saying positive things about him. Maybe we don't have to call him phenomenal, though, and, you know, speak so over the top about how great he is, but I feel like, you know, Bobby was a fine acquisition. The real thing is that the free agent market at tackle was not good. I mean, Trenton Brown and Juwan James, at what they went for, it's just, that was never going to happen in Cincinnati, rightfully so. So I think the real thing is Bobby Hart was really the best move they could make in that market. And we're not going to, and so I could do without the term phenomenal. I've been hard on that already. But it just feels like every time they try to say nice things about Bobby, it just sort of makes it worse. But I understand. I mean, what are they supposed to say? And they're not going to dog all these other signings around the league. They're not going to say Quan Alexander got too much money at middle linebacker, or Trenton Brown got paid way too much by Oakland. But I think that's really what it is. And then, yeah, we'll see who they end up drafting.
Yeah. When you hear the coach, we all had the evaluation and,
right,
you know, he's a good player, you know, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine. And there is so much of, although I don't mind. I mean, what are you going to say? Yeah. You know, we paid him only because we didn't want to pay other guys who are better than him. We know he sucks. Like, what if Zach sat there in front of his fruit and was like, yeah, I know Bobby Hart sucks. I'm aware Bobby Hart sucks, but we need somebody in case we don't get somebody. Like, I got to have somebody. I literally have nobody. Like, I think Kent Perkins is still on one of those like special reserve rookie contracts. Like, it's Cordy Glenn and not a soul, not a beating heart in the room that could play right tackle in case the draft doesn't fall our way, right? Somebody's got to be there, right? So what is it? That's the rant I want. Like, that, I want the, what do you want me to do? I need somebody who has a soul to stand at right tackle at some point.
Well, we've turned Sean McVay into such a superhero, and there's nothing that he can't do or scheme or coach. But I really,
scheme it up.
What I really think, though, that Zach Taylor has his fishing story that could become better than Sean McVay, is that he is the guy that figured out an offense to be successful with Bobby Hart at right tackle.
That's the first line of his Hall of Fame plaque. once constructed a top five offense with Bobby Hart at right tackle. Enshrine him. First ballot. Unanimous.
It's on it. I just changed his Wikipedia page.
Oh, man. That's great stuff. So outside of Zach, I mean, so Zach was there for about 65 minutes with you. You know, he had some similar defenses of Andy that you've heard in the past. I won't subject you guys to that again. Anything else just in general, even if it was observational or something he said or just the way he acted, something besides the picture? We know everyone likes it. Oh, he looked like a junior high kid in the picture. You know, I would have called Jay Wright. I'm like, give me your suit, guy. I'm going to show up looking like an absolute million bucks, like the love child of Jay Wright and Pat Riley. And I'm going to be the greatest looking coach, sweating my face off in this photo, just to assure that no one ever tries to dog me with the, oh, he's the youngest kid here. Well, even though you wouldn't be with McVay, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel that picture's terrible. No, it's not good for anybody. Jay Gruden got caught like looking at the ground and had to talk about it for like a day. I mean, it's just, those pictures are never good. The only person it's good for is Andy Reid every year, because he's always in it. He's always wearing like a bright, flowery Hawaiian shirt, and he's owning his size. He's just like, you just love it. But outside of that, it's rarely good for
him. I don't understand those. I think the photographer actually says, "Oh, wait a minute, guys. I need you guys to all turn around and face the other way. That's looking into the sun, as mandated by the league policy."
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm only going to take one, all right? I don't, everybody else is like, all right, let me just shoot 72 pictures, and one of them you guys will all be looking up. No, he's like, he's got one shot. He's got he's got one of those old, not a Polaroid, but the like underwater-friendly yellow cameras, you know, with like 24 photos on it that you find out later if any of them looked any good.
Right, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure that's how that rolls. Yeah,
click and wind.
Click and wind. we used to play a game where we actually
I don't like where this is going.
We went out in New Orleans, myself and another friend of mine, and we each had our own disposable camera, and we said we were going to see who could get the greatest photos of from the night on this camera, and the next day those pictures would be given to a set of judges who were another group of friends that were there with us, and they would decide, not knowing who took what, which pictures were the best and the most debaucherous of our night in New Orleans. That is the most fun I've ever had with a disposable camera, and I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. That story could have gone much more X-rated, so I'm glad that.
No, but I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't tell it if it was X-rated.
You have too. You have too much integrity for the spirit of the hustle and the contest that you would not turn in photos that were X-rated. No. So I appreciate that.
No, I wouldn't, like, you know, okay, I've got a panel of dudes. I'm going to go try to hit a strip club for the win. Right. No, that's not, and that wasn't the case anyway. I'm glad that you went there.
That's exactly where I went. As far as other things that came out of the Zach thing, I thought that it was interesting. He was asked quite a few times just about, like, that. You know how these things go, like the local media people, such as myself, you know, I'm there for 65 minutes, but you'd have this sort of wave of nationals come in. So, and then they'd go out. And the number one question that the Nationals asked was, how do you see this AFC North evolving from a smash mouth, run the ball, play defense division to where it has Baker Mayfield talking to opposing coaches, Lamar Jackson having an entire offense, you know, cultivated around him? And so Zach did – that was kind of a question that was asked quite a bit. And – he was asked what his perception of the Bengals franchise was, how ownership is, how much support they have, and now what the reality has been now that he's been on the job for almost 2 months. So that was really kind of what the Nationals were wanting to know. And those are questions that he got asked like 3 or 4 times, and I had to hear the same answer virtually 4 times. So that was sort of what people around the nation wanted to know from Zach.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Browns and the Steelers are the two hottest topics in the NFL at this point, you know, or this offseason they were, and those leaving Pittsburgh and those arriving in Cleveland, and the Bengals are sort of the other guy there. I feel like people are all trying to make these evaluations of the AFC North, and they always never know what to say about the Bengals. It's always like the Browns added OBJ and did all this, and the Steelers, you know, they lost all these pieces, and the Ravens, they got Earl Thomas, and the Bengals, well, they're doing something. I don't know what they're doing. Like, that's how it always, they signed Bobby Hart, right? Yeah. It's like, that's the only, nobody knows really what to say. Because it's a total gloss over and nobody really pays any attention. Nobody even remembers that they were 4-1 or gives a crap that they were 4-1 or 5-3 or any of that stuff or cares about any of the injuries or remembers them. So I do find that the national perspective is always interesting. I wrote a little bit this week, the lead of the walkthrough, about long Super Bowl odds. Because I find it interesting how Vegas views things this time of year and the idea of, oh, their odds went from, right, the Browns went from 25-1 to 12-1 or whatever. And you know, the Bengals are only two teams have longer odds than them. And I said, well, let's go back in some few recent years to this exact time. I get those emails that, you know, every year, just like anybody else does. Here's the Super Bowl odds at this time after free agency. What does that look like? How does that pan out? It has almost zero predictive qualities to it. If you look back a couple of years, the average rank 1 through 32 in the odds this time of year of those that end up in like the final four is 15.8. If you take New England out, who's a freaking unicorn, mm-hmm. right? Like they've been in the AFC title game every single year. So yeah, they're going to always be ranked towards the top or whatever. But even if you don't, you're still in the middle. It's like 13 and some change. When you look at teams in the Super Bowl, teams that just made the playoffs, that's all right there in the middle, right about 16. Team Jacksonville was a sniff away from going from the 30th ranked team at this point in the season to winning the Super Bowl. The Rams, when they made the playoffs for the first time, were in the back. Philly, when they won the Super Bowl, was like 23rd ranked in odds. I mean, it's this stuff and the way teams are viewed this time of year, it changes so fast. Like the league just changes so quick and the groupthink changes so fast. That's what I think is people don't realize is groupthink just moves the national conversation along, and people are so definitive. This franchise sucks. This franchise is good. These are the ones you should follow, and it changes, and not just year to year, week to week in the NFL.
Right. Let me tell you how quickly the NFL changes. A guy in a Browns polo came up and pulled a chair away from the table that Zach was going to sit at, and he goes, "We're probably going to need extra chairs over here with the Browns. Is it okay if I take this one?" And I was like, for the Browns. And it was. Yeah. Freddie Kitchens was holding court. I mean, they were the rage.
Last year, Hugh Jackson at that table was doing his impression of Baker Mayfield at the Oklahoma Pro Day going, that was like the actual like fun thing that came out of the entire owners meetings last time was his impression of Baker Mayfield as the Pied Piper of Oklahoma football. What else do we need to get to here? Cause I know we're running long. We got to a lot of,
I got a lot of stuff. I got a non-football topic that I think is for your wheelhouse.
Okay.
Zach Taylor said that he grew up in Oklahoma, which is true, but that he felt like his experiences in Norman were comparative to Cincinnati. And I feel like I said some similar things. I was like, I'm from Georgia, but for some reason, Cincinnati reminded me of Georgia at some places. And I was like, why does Cincinnati remind everybody of where they grew up or where they came from? Is that a That's So Cincinnati topic maybe for you and Jason to tackle?
Ooh, that's really good for transplants that feel a sense of home here. Yeah, that is a good That's So Cincinnati topic. I will make sure we push that along and Jason and I tackle that. We should have some people who have transplanted and felt like it was home. That's a good idea. No, I think Cincinnati as a whole has a very homey feel to it. It's a small town that's a big city. And I think if you're from a small town, if you understand the draw of small towns, I think it speaks to mm-hmm. you a little bit. In my opinion, I think it has that feel to it. It doesn't, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, these big cities, LA, where he just was, these places do not have small town. There's nothing small town feel about it. This is the closest thing outside of Green Bay you'll get to a small town feel.
The other team that I think Zach was closely linked to during this offseason was Arizona. Cliff Kingsbury just bought a $4 million mansion here in Arizona.
I bet he did.
He's kind of on. Cliff Kingsbury is on the opposite end of the Zach Taylor spectrum in terms of. I don't know. Everything.
Yes.
I don't think that Zach Taylor can dance to the Dougie, but I'd like to see Cliff Kingsbury try to live in a hotel with four kids for a month. I don't know.
Yeah. Zach just needs that house to get finished.
It sounded like it.
Yeah, Zach has four kids, and Cliff Kingsbury, I assume, has four girlfriends. So it's like, right? Isn't it probably
he knows about balance? He knows about multiple.
I want to get to one other. I want to get to one other Mike thing before diving quickly into Quez and Kerry Wynn, and that is Mike talking about replay. For those that have heard him before. You know this spiel. You have heard this spiel. You know how he feels about the expansion of replay. He has voted against it at pretty much every turn in the NFL as far as expansion of it. He does not believe necessarily in the direction that it has gone since what its original purpose was. The difference being most of the owners in that room have no clue what the original purpose of instant replay was because they weren't around then. And there's like the Rooneys and there's like the Maras. I mean, there's Mike. There's very few. And I wrote the story about their family a couple years ago. There's just such a small faction of true football families left owning teams. It's all these moguls that have come in, the Arthur Blanks of the Home Depot world. And, you get all that's what, oil moguls and Shad Khan. It's a very weird scenario. Anyway, they don't, and I think that's where Mike comes from. So people say, but it is anytime. This is my owner. This will be my owner's meeting memories, like my instinct to the end of time. It will be anytime you find out what a vote was, because there's a lot of that milling around, whispering to each other what the vote was. As people try to figure all that out and write about it. And every time someone says, 31-1, like, oh, damn it. Now I got to write about the one.
Right.
It's like this, it's always like that. Cause you brace for the one. You've got a pretty good feeling. You know who the detractor is on a lot of stuff like this all the time. In this one, I'm not going to say I side with Mike because I do think that I'm okay with the expansion of replay to include defensive and offensive pass interference. But I feel him, man. I feel where he's coming from. I want to bring in Mike talking about replay and his vision of it, and then we'll discuss it real quick and move on.
Oh, it has a long history. And if you go back to the very beginning, and I'd be curious to remember what year that was. But
1976
was it, and we have been against it for all these years since. And the reason that we are against it is that it interrupts the game. It changes the character of the game, in my mind. I think it's in some ways sort of odd to see people all sitting there waiting for somebody in New York to tell them it is or it isn't. I'd rather just play the game. The history of it is my father was against it. Tex Ram was the one that brought it in to the league. And the argument is that we now have what do you call the technical ways to provide this, and it's a way that you can correct officiating error. So when they put it in, they were smart enough to restrict it more than it is today, and it was supposed to be used only when the play had a big impact on the game, and otherwise you weren't supposed to use it. Well, it evolved over time, and now they use it in all kinds of situations. I don't think that's good for the game. It is the fact that there's going to be officiating error, but it's also the fact that the instant replay doesn't always correct it. It just compounds the problem on occasions. And there is no answer that, at least there is no answer that, well, we're going to have instant replay and there won't be any more bad pass interference calls. I don't think so, but we'll see. With this pass interference thing, they've penetrated a fire break, if you will. We've never had instant replay for judgment calls. And suddenly we're going to have that. I don't know how it's going to sort out. It may be that it works great. We'll see. I have my doubts.
So there's Mike talking about replay. What was kind of the vibe around the owners and media and everybody there as that kind of surprise decision unfolded?
Well, I think for a man that is confident enough in himself and his life to order a grilled cheese sandwich during daylight hours, I think that he, on principle, he disagrees with this franchise has disagreed with instant replay since 1976, and it's not going to change. Yeah. That's serious. So I do think that there are probably other owners that would vote against this, but like you said, with sort of the groupthink, once you see the way a vote's going, what's the difference in it being, you know, 27-5 or whatever it may be? You know, Mike could have just gone with it once it was 31, but he's not afraid to be that one, and so no. He's going to be the headline out of that. Look, we've seen calls like the Steelers Bengals game. What was that? Week 4 or 5. Yeah. Had
Antonio Brown. Yeah.
Yes.
Week 6.
This just so happened to be in January in the Final Four, and it's been inevitable since it happened that it was going to happen, and it was nearly unanimous, and Mike on principle is not going to just go with the flow and make a vote yes because everybody else is doing it.
Yeah. I worry about something that I saw that Dean Blandino actually had talked about with this rule, and that is I don't want the last minutes of these games to look like college basketball games where they're reviewing everything and they go to the table yeah. over and over again, and it takes the momentum and the flow out of the end of these games. It's awful, and it really kills the most dramatic moments of these contests. And I don't want to see everything, every play thrown down the field anywhere, going to New York in the last 2 minutes when it's not a challengeable thing. That's what I really do worry about is I don't want this to turn into college basketball going to the table over and over again, because it could. If everything is open for, you know, going to New York in the final 2 minutes of the game and everybody's throwing the ball down the field and trying to draw contact, those are tough calls, man.
Yeah.
Like, you just got to make them and go on a lot of times. And now, if everything could be reviewed, how many times is this going to happen?
And that's that was Mike's biggest point, is that this is the fire break. Because it's not just pass interference. It's holding. And that's the next thing. So if you've got a game to if you've got a holding call that calls back a touchdown, should that be reviewed? And I think the New England Patriots have been a proponent of making everything be reviewable, but a team only has so many reviews per game. I think that was another thing that was put out there.
Yeah. So that's what I would do. Now, I think that's the smart to me, make everything reviewable. But let's get rid of the, like, New York in the last 2 minutes crap. Let's just have it just be three challenges apiece so you limit the stoppages. I don't mind stopping it for whatever you want to stop it for. I do mind there being a million stoppages. So let's just make it review everything and three challenges. And if you're out of challenges, you're out of challenges. That's the way I feel about it. And if you win a challenge, you keep it. You don't use it. You know, where you're not, you have to. You keep getting them right, and you run out even though you're getting them right. No, you hold on to them, and you get, as long as you keep getting them right, you get three whiffs, three strikes, and you're out, right? And that's, or something to that effect, is what I think the answer is there. But Mike is not going to back off of his perch and how he feels about that. We know that much.
Or we could actually get Elon Musk to do something that we all really need and need to have, which is maybe robots be referees, because that's we're striving for perfection, but there is a flow and a rhythm to these games that we become accustomed to, and you're right, it's going to be thrown off because officiating, it just so happens, is very difficult. And as a former umpire of 12 and under softball, I can tell you. It is an impossible job, and, you know, I think with you get me going on this. They got 4K televisions. We got slow motion replays. We get to see everything these referees screw up on every play because these things happen very quickly. And so now we've just got a lot of mainstream criticism that's led to the expansion of this thing, and I don't think that's the end of it.
I don't have a problem with eye in the sky official either, by the way.
I'm down with that.
I am in support of that. I think that needs to be a thing. As long as he's calling it live, he's sitting there watching it on TV, calling it live, what he sees, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Move it on. Move it along. Keep it moving. Keep it moving.
Let's not turn this into college basketball. That's I would be absolutely shaking in my boots about what that's going to look like if it looks like college hoops, because it is a absolute killer for that game right now. All right, let's get into some Bengals stuff that happened. I want to talk about Quez because we haven't had a BBP since his about face. Mm. I've talked to some people inside the organization. I've talked to Darquez. I had my opinions on it beforehand, people outside the organization. Most people did not see this one coming. I mean, I think most people thought that when they – yeah, the door was open, but most assumed that Darquez would be moving on as soon as Bengals moved over to BW Webb, and then certainly once they started spending money on other players. And then all of a sudden, Kansas City goes with Bashaud Breeland instead of Darquez after he makes his visit to KC. Other teams were – still trying to talk to Darquez, but at that point, him and his agent and his fiance, it sounded like, had a little bit of a come to Jesus on a look, maybe we all just need to sit down and regroup here and take the best thing that we have on the table, go back to the Bengals, and just 1 year prove it and try to go back next year when maybe the market will be better, because the cornerback market turned into an absolute disaster this year in free agency. Nobody got money. Nobody really got money. Bradley Roby got 1 year, 10, and that's about the closest thing to anybody really getting money that Darquez was looking for. You know, some slot corner, even the slot corner deals that you thought would be good weren't that good. You know, Justin Coleman probably had the richest deal. Yeah, I found it interesting, and this is a huge win. I mean, if you had told me before free agency started that, you know, Bobby Hart and Darquez would both be back, it would be somewhere in the $10 to $12 million range for the two of them, I'd say, yeah, that worked out well. It's really, they gave Quez 8 and Bobby 4 or 9 and 3, right? Something like right. that. I would not have believed that it was the flip side of it. But the end result is probably about the same, and now they have some depth at corner. And Darquez is going to be playing motivated. You know, from a Bengals side of perspective, this worked out as good as it could have, in a way that they couldn't even imagine that it would have.
Right. If I didn't know the name and you told me, okay, the Bengals, they offered this player a set number. They said, this is what we think you're worth. If you want to go out and try and test the market, see if you can get more, have at it, and we will welcome you back. If it doesn't work out, I would have thought that would have been Bobby Hart, but it was Quez.
Yeah,
and you know the Bengals have been consistent with him since dating back to last season, when you know talks kind of stalled out and they pushed it to this point. They've had a number for him. That number stayed the same until it came way down when he had to come back. So, yeah, and now I think the point you make too. Now he's on a prove it, and so he's going to be motivated. And I just feel like the Bengals just won on all accounts on this one.
Yeah, and Quez sort of. So, you know, he came back. He had a overnight flight back from the West Coast. Came in, signed the contract, and then he was asked, "Okay, the reporters want to talk to you." And the poor guy was so tired. He's like, "Man, I got to get a nap first." Like he finally came back from his nap, and he just looked like a dude who's just been through it, you know. And granted, you know, we all probably look like that when we come back from the West Coast and do those red eye flights and things like that. But when you can throw that on top of everything else he'd been through the last couple of weeks, you know, he called it a frustrating process. He sort of said in no fewer words that, yeah, none of this went the way we wanted it to. We had to kind of just sit down and figure out what our decision was going to be next. And it wore on him, you know, it really did. And they're just going to hope that things are better next year because – I think he was nervous and the worst case scenario kind of happened. And you never want to be sitting there and know that you could have gotten 3 years and $26 million and you have 1 year, five. Like, nobody wants to be that. And I'd be looking at my agent some kind of way if that's the way this went down, to be honest with you, for not understanding what the market actually would be, for totally misunderstanding it. And that costing a lot of money, but I don't have enough knowledge of that situation to say whether that agent will be back to negotiate for Darquez again next year.
Right.
But you know that's tough for him, and I feel for Darquez because I feel for all these players in these situations. Like it's their first time going into free agency, and the only time they will be at their peak market value. Where they're in their prime, this first contract, this is your chance to get generational wealth that will set you up for a lifetime. It's nerve-wracking, and you want to get the best deal, but you also will get absolutely chewed up and spit out by this league if you don't play your cards right. And
right.
That's what happened here. So I feel for a guy like Darquez who just wants to play football. He doesn't want to be in the negotiation business.
Right, and the Bengals also come out of this thing with more depth and versatility with a guy like B.W. Webb, who I can't 100% say this, but they were pretty set on that being their slot corner and Quez going off and not coming back. Now he comes back, and Webb is a guy that can play. He can play the slot, but he can also play outside. So that takes you out of the Darius Phillips range.
Yeah, and now both those guys now, with Quez and BW, give you that. So that's right. That's nice depth and versatility in a position where guys are going to get hurt.
Right. So, like I said, I feel like the Bengals won this one. At Quez's expense.
Yeah. Let's talk about Kerry Wynn real quick. defensive lineman from the Giants. The Bengals signed on a cheap 1 year. I really like. It's kind of a throwaway deal that no one has probably talked about, and a guy that no one's heard of. Quietly, this was a really nice signing by the Bengals. I think it was kind of a nice little find by Lou Anarumo and the Bengals scouting staff. You know, Lou obviously knows him from New York and saw how he played. If you look at the sample, you know, it was a smaller sample size. He played a decent amount, but, you know, they kind of kicked him inside a lot. He played inside and outside. Among all defensive linemen last year in Pro Football Focus, 232 qualifiers. He was ninth in run stop percentage. Okay, so percentage of total plays you're out there where you made a run stop, up around 12%. Okay, the Bengals don't have anybody above about 70th. Ranked 70th on that list, and nobody, I think, and that's like Josh Tupo at like 7%, okay? We know the Bengals couldn't stop the damn run last year, and they were awful at it. Their defensive line has a hole in it, and Michael Johnson is gone now, and they needed somebody to fill in the Michael Johnson role but actually be productive in it, which is something that Michael Johnson hadn't done the last 2 years. That is first down, second down-ish, maybe run situations, play that outside edge, make some plays and run stop, be able to rush the passer a little bit, which he actually did better than Jordan Willis and Michael Johnson last year. If you look at his pass rush productivity, take those snaps, that 30 to 40% of snaps, if that, maybe less, set up Carl Lawson and Sam Hubbard to go get the passer on passing downs, which is a lot of second and third down stuff. That's a spot that they need. And to get somebody who's better pretty substantially than the guys that were doing it last year at as a throwaway one-year whatever deal, and a guy who's an undrafted dude that's just been a work-hard guy his whole life, proven it. He's got his sixth year in the league now, being undrafted out of Richmond. Like, mad credit to him for getting to this far, and I think that's the kind of guy that you want. I think it can be a shrewd sign. You need those role-playing rotational guys to help you out.
Yeah, I've changed my fantasy baseball team name to Lou Anarumo's PFF Sleepers. because BWF, he's got some of those sneaky, weird PFF grades, and yeah. Same here, so – comes from the Giants, and he's one of Lou's guys.
I actually want you to change that. I'm in your league, so I expect to see that.
That's it. That's where it's at.
I love it. All right. So that wraps us up. I know we have a long one, but we had a lot to get to. We're going to start back on Monday, and we're going to start to get into really the full-on draft podcast series. So that means every pod from here on out, we're going to have some more draft experts popping in on the podcast and weighing in. I'm going to have Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports joining me on Monday for a portion of the program. He's the world's foremost mock drafter. He puts one out every Monday since, like, I can't remember how long it's been. We're going to talk a little bit about first-round dynamics with him and what we think will happen. And the PFF guys are going to be in the near future. We're going to be heading up to their place over and over the Rhine and doing a long sit down with Steve Palazzolo and his crew and get with them on drafts. All that's coming. I'm looking forward to it. Do it every year. It's one of my favorite podcasts that we do because these guys teach me so much and we all learn so much from all the good hard work that they do with the draft. So all that is coming up. We'll be back on a normal schedule, and drafts right on the corner. We're less than a month out, man. It's big.
Got a few mocks to go.
The team reports April 9th, so that'll be kicking up before you know it. We'll have actual back in the locker room time again. So good work in Arizona, sir. I'm happy that you're going to come back in one piece, not burnt to a crisp. All those things. Surviving your experience. Survive in advance, man. Survive in advance.
This is March.
This is March. Did you have a Today in Kanye that you were saving up, or did you not have one?
I feel like Today in Kanye kind of got canceled because he's not doing outlandish things anymore, which I'm kind of happy for. Maybe he's in a happier place and he's not so unsettled. So I don't have any headlines that I think will make you laugh.
Well, that's sad. I expect some to show up in the near future, though, because I miss it.
All good gags are eventually retired.
That's true. That's true. No, not really. The true good gags, right. The gag of the year, it will live on forever. Gags are said in the Bengals media room that originated in like 1974, I promise you. They will not go in. Some good gags will never die. A good Kanye gag, I feel like, always has a place.
Well, for a gag to outlast the Brown family's distaste of instant replay, that's quite a lot to be said for that gag.
Really is. All right, man. Have a safe flight back to Cincinnati. Look forward to seeing you back in the home front next week when we get back together. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. We'll talk to you next week.